Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time lifetime companion to intrepid traveler Dan Webster.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that doesn't always agree on the movies we see, but always does feature the three of us willing to argue our respective cases. That goes particularly at this time of year when the Motion Picture Academy decides who should and who should not win those little gold statues called Oscar. The three of us will share our views on the MPA's latest night of self-congratulation, its 2026 broadcast, but then we'll change gears and debate the qualities of yet another in what has been a long string of music documentaries, this one an Amazon Studio streaming feature titled Paul McCartney, Man on the Run. Let's start with Oscar. Nathan?
Yeah, I'll kick it off with just sort of a short rundown of some of the biggest winners from last week's ceremony. So One Battle After Another took home six awards overall, including picture, director, original screenplay, and supporting actor for Sean Penn, who was not in attendance at the ceremony. Sinners got four, including best actor for Michael B. Jordan, original screenplay, and best cinematography. Autumn Dorald Arkapaw, the winner, became the first woman to win in that category in the 98-year history
Justified.
Of the Oscars. Best actress went to Jessie Buckley for Hamnet, supporting actress to Amy Madigan in Weapons. Sentimental Value took international feature, and then K-pop Demon Hunters got animated feature and best original song. I don't think there were any huge surprises in the list of winners, except for in live action short, where there was a tie, the seventh ever in Oscars history. So that was exciting. But I went back and listened to our prediction show, and we actually did okay based on who came out. So
I don't think we would have won any money, though.
Maybe not. But I know we always like to talk about the show itself. So, MP, maybe I'll throw it to you, and you can give me your impressions of that.
I really liked the opening with Conan O'Brien. But it didn't have consistent energy throughout. So that left me to looking at the outfits that people were wearing, you know, because I'm such a fashionista, right? and there were some really outstanding looks. I would say Rose Byrne looked great. Her dress sparkled, so it might have blinded some people in the first row. Gwyneth Paltrow made a very bold choice, a simple dress, but it was slit all the way down the side. And Elle Fanning's dress was just gorgeous, although I think she should have chosen a light lilac color instead of white. There were some really awful looks. I'm calling out you, Kevin O'Leary. Sigourney Weaver, I have no idea what she was wearing. Melissa McCarthy, that looked like three outfits put together at once. And Heidi Klum, ugh. So these women are gorgeous, and I don't know if their stylist wasn't looking in the mirror, so I don't know.
Okay, but Joan Rivers, how about Chloe Zhao's look? She looked like she was in a funeral procession. I actually thought that was pretty cool.
It was cool, but I don't know if it was if she captured the spirit of the whole thing.
She makeup, captured the spirit of her movie, that's for
yes,
sure.
Yes, she did. She did. And the makeup was very subdued for once. A few red lips. I liked that. There were some divisive choices. Jessie Buckley, I liked what she wore. Some people did not. Chase Infinity got a lot of pushback, and I thought she looked great. Timothy Chalamet, didn't know about that one, looked like a boy band member. And Kate Hudson, I liked her outfit, but others did not. All I have to say is none of the singers from the K-pop trio would have been able to sit down in any of the outfits that they were wearing. Just putting that out
good
there
thing
for
they were
practicality.
Standing then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it was too bad that they got played off.
I know.
I mean, you know, there's so many stupid skits that they do and let other people go on and on and on, and then they play off these people. That's ridiculous.
I wanted to bring that up because at the Oscar party that I was at, well, I hosted it, crammed a dozen people into my tiny
living
room.
You didn't go to a Vanity Fair after party,
no,
right?
No, I was not invited to Elton's party, I'm sorry to say. But every time they cut off a speech, there was just this, you know, the shout in the room. People want to hear the speeches. The K-pop Demon Hunters winners, both times they won, they got cut off. And you're right, the production is so concerned about time. They have these comic bits that drone on, the ones with the Bridesmaids cast and Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. And I know that they have to put those pieces in there for just production's sake. But when you look back at the history of memorable Oscar moments, they're never in the scripted bits. They're always in the parts that aren't prepared by the actual producers. So unless you have an Adrian Brody situation where someone is droning on and on for minutes, just let people talk. Usually it's like 30 or 40 seconds you're adding to the overall run.
Well, and at least Adrian Brody was able to laugh at himself this year.
Yeah, I guess
well,
so.
Well, I think he kind of had to.
Yeah.
Conan made sure of that.
That's right. So going back to Conan, I still really like Conan O'Brien as the host. He just has always had this silly, self-deprecating energy that I think really fits a show that has so much self-importance in it. Yep. It desperately needs that. And you mentioned that pre-taped bit he had at the beginning where he's dressed as Aunt Gladys from Weapons and he's running through all the animated movies. It gave me flashbacks to similar bits that the hosts at the MTV Movie Awards used to do, where they would insert themselves into the nominated movies. And I just think that's always
I just think the kids should have been running like the kids in the movie Weapons, you know, with their hands out
Although
the side.
They captured the ending of Weapons so well that I thought, did they literally put him in the actual footage? But I think that was footage they shot for the Oscars.
I thought so,
alone.
Too, yeah.
There were no surprises, really.
Not really.
I mean, Jessie Buckley, we knew she was going to win right away. But I want to pick a fight about Best International Feature Film of the Year and Best Documentary Feature Film. Now, we all liked Sentimental Value. We reviewed it on the show.
It was in my top ten.
Yeah, and it is a good movie. But there were at least two movies of the international features. It Was Just an Accident and The Voice of Hind Rajab that are powerful, powerful political statements, and they get overlooked. It makes me start to think, well, you know, we settle for a movie that arguably could be called a Hallmark movie about a family. I mean,
I'm sorry.
The Voice of Hind Rajab is a movie that should bring anyone to his knees. And I'm sorry, that should have won. Or it was just an accident. Considering everything that's going on in Iran right now, that is a wonderful, wonderful movie with a killer of an ending.
Well, and I wonder if the voting period had been different based on current events, maybe that would have had
perhaps
an edge, yeah.
And if we talk about documentaries,
exactly.
I mean, I think that the documentary that ultimately won,
Mr. Nobody Against Putin,
right, had some positive features, and we talked about them previously,
yeah, and
but it was probably
liked,
our...
We liked it, too. Of the five, for me, it was ranked number four.
For me as well.
You know,
and it was five on your list.
The Perfect Neighbor was an interesting, innovative way to tell a story.
So we should have clocked this when we did our documentary episode because we did not mention that Mr. Nobody Against Putin won the BAFTA for Best Documentary. So we should have maybe seen that coming. I will say, even though I didn't love that film, I thought that the speeches that the filmmakers gave were really, really lovely.
Well, we think of what won last year for Best Documentary, No Other Land.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was
exactly.
A particularly compelling doc. So, you know, I'm going to give them some grace here, but The Perfect Neighbor was on my top 10 list. I had predicted Come See Me in the Good Light as the winner. But
I would have even settled for the Alabama Solution.
Yeah.
You know?
It was a strong category this year. I'll get at that. I want to go back to some of the good things about the Oscar ceremony. Of the five nominated original songs, only two were actually performed. I would have loved to have seen Nick Cave do his song from Train Dreams, but I have a feeling it would not have been as splashy as the numbers we got. I thought that the musical highlight was the staging from
Sinners.
The song from Sinners, I Lied to You. It recreated that set piece from the movie. It was so well done. I also thought that the In Memoriam segment this year was really, really strong. That's a segment that you can let run on and let breathe, especially because we lost so many legends this past year. But Billy Crystal talking about Rob Reiner and then bringing out all of his collaborators. Rachel McAdams talking about Diane Keaton and Catherine O'Hara.
I thought that was really impressive.
And then, you know, the legend Barbara Streisand talking about fellow legend Robert Redford. That was a really nice moment in the middle of the show, and I thought they did a really good job with that.
Yeah.
And I guess in terms of balance, I probably in the second half would have liked a little more Conan because I thought it started to flatten out a bit.
Yeah, and there were some technical snafus. Like at one point they cut back to him and they clearly did not give him the direction that they were live again. But Conan is just so good at when he bombs or something isn't working, he knows how to bring the crowd back. He's an expert.
Okay,
at that.
Now I think the big shout out has to go to when the tie happened.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think, I mean, we've seen people struggle over the most basic things. And
Kumail Nanjiani did
a
good job.
Yeah, he did a really great job.
And the last thing to say here, too, is that finally, Paul Thomas Anderson actually has an Academy Award, and he has three now. So, you know, I think he had 14 nominations before he finally won. So that was my highlight of the night.
And I want to say I like the Bridesmaids segment.
Okay.
Yeah, of course you did. Anyway, that was our discussion of the 2026 Oscars broadcast. This is Movies 101. Remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. We'll be right back to talk about the Amazon streaming documentary, Paul McCartney, Man on the Run. Now, at this point in the show, we would normally take a short break. Nathan, Mary Pat, and I would disappear into the ether before returning to discuss or argue about the merits of another film. But this week is a little different because it's our spring pledge drive.
Ah, yes, the time of year when we take a break from our regularly scheduled programming and ask you not just to tune into your favorite shows, but to support them with a gift.
As an independent local nonprofit, SPR's funding has always come mostly from you, our listeners. It isn't a subscription service, so you can give what you're able, as you're able to. And while our station used to receive federal funding, that went away late last year. So we now rely on our community for all our funding.
That's right. And we provide our programming for free because it's part of our mission. That's the public in public radio. But our programming isn't free to produce or broadcast.
Just for this show, we need studio space to record, and those studios are filled with equipment which needs kept in working order.
And we need to pay Aaron, who directs the show. Say hi, Aaron.
Hey, everybody.
And again, that's just for this show. Keeping this program and all of our programming on the air takes a village.
So, instead of going into the ether like normal, the three of us are here asking you, our loyal listeners, to give back during the drive.
Whether you make a one-time donation or start a sustaining membership at $10 to $20 a month, you'll support the long-term health of SPR and make sure this show keeps reaching movie fans across the Inland Northwest and maybe across the globe. Who knows?
And you can give now by going to SpokanePublicRadio.org.
And finally, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And with that, we are back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I shared our reactions to Sunday's 2026 Oscars broadcast. Let's now turn to something new, the Amazon Studios streaming documentary, Paul McCartney, Man on the Run, directed by Morgan Neville and featuring the former Beatle McCartney himself. By now, thanks to previous documentaries such as Peter Jackson's Get Back series, we know a lot about the breakup of the Beatles, but maybe not everything. Filmmaker Morgan Neville is perhaps best known for having directed his 2013 Oscar-winning documentary feature 20 Feet from Stardom and for his 2018 Fred Rogers documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor. In Paul McCartney, Man on the Run, he tells the story of the former Beatle, known popularly as the Cute Beatle, keying not just on his role in the supergroup's breakup, but then his ensuing career with the group known as Wings. Many of you out there may be tired of hearing yet more tales of the Beatles, but fans, and the three of us certainly are that, are always willing to hear more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If I had one criticism of what Neville has done, it's that he doesn't give enough credit to Denny Lane, the former Moody Blues musician, for the sound that Wings was able to produce.
Yeah, do I think we need more Beatles documentaries? Probably not. Will I watch them when they come out, including that 9-hour remastered anthology series? Yes, yes, I will. And this movie is only focused on Paul's decade after the Beatles. So the band's dissolution is one bookend, John Lennon's murder is the other. And both of those events are framed basically as moments when Paul was forced to grow up, both personally and musically. And let's make no bones about it. Paul McCartney, Man on the Run, is as much a brand extension as it is a film. McCartney himself is an executive producer on this project. So I don't think it's as critical of some of his 70s output as it probably could be. I mean, this is a movie that casually plays Wonderful Christmas Time and leaves it unremarked upon, despite it being one of the most annoying songs ever written. but the film does deal with the fact that McCartney's public perception in the wake of the Beatles breakup was fraught. At one point, an interview subject, I can't remember who it is because it's done in that style where it's disembodied voices, not actual on-camera talking heads, calls him remarkably uncool. And of course, a lot of people blamed him for the Beatles breakup because he announced it first, although Lennon had officially quit in secret months before and nobody knew about it. And it also shows how in that ensuing decade, Lennon was talking about politics. Harrison was talking about spirituality. But McCartney was just kind of committed to his dance hall songs, his vaudeville songs.
Which, love songs.
His silly love songs. Yeah. And Lennon famously back in the Beatles days called songs like, you know, Obla-Di Obla-Da and Honey Pie, Paul's granny music, which I've always loved. But what really works for me in the movie Man on the Run is its portrait of Wings as a band having to really prove itself despite or maybe because of having this hugely famous musician amongst its ranks, and as a look at the competition that was going on between Lennon and McCartney in those years. They were kind of writing call and response songs back and forth. I also loved its look at Linda McCartney.
That's what I was going to talk about a little bit.
Linda McCartney, yeah.
And
yes.
it's so intriguing because the archival footage in this documentary I thought was great, especially at the beginning. But it was the second half that captured me more because it was really, I mean, it's post-Beatles, but it's really about their relationship because she was always got a really bad rap
in a variety of ways. They were vicious to her in the press. Yes.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think looking back on it now, I mean, we have this love story about JFK Jr. and Carolyn Bessette. We have the whole Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift, romance writ large. But this woman was one of the first people who had to take on all comers.
I think
Linda Eastman was a little bit more benign presence than Yoko Ono. And just to see what she had to weather in terms of dealing with everything. And they made a really smart move by going out to the country, getting away from the scrutiny of everyone. And then I was also so impressed by remembering that people did show up for their concerts. They were like excited about it. Now, was it just to see him? At first, but I don't know going on. I mean, they really seem to be getting into this pop music.
Yeah, well, I know that there are a lot of Wings fans out there. I've known many. I never really cared for them. There are some hummable songs.
I would consider myself a Wings fan. I think they have a handful of really great albums.
But you have to admit, and I think this is generally accepted across the world, that the music that each of them did individually, you're talking about John Lennon and Paul McCartney, never came close to what they were able to do together.
Sure. I mean, it was also just so wildly different from what the Beatles did.
Yes.
Harrison is a solo artist, too.
They were inextricably intertwined. And that, I liked the fact that despite some of the animosity and the, the things that we learned about in the tabloid press, there was this love. There was this affection between these two guys who had known each other since they were in their mid-teens.
Tough kids from the streets of Liverpool.
Right, exactly. And so the fact that there was a reconciliation. I mean, the footage of the interview with Paul after he learns about John Lennon's death.
I mean, I remember that.
And he was just gobsmacked. I mean, he couldn't respond. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but at the time I thought, now that's a tough guy. Look at that. He's covering up his emotions so well.
But other people saw it as him being callous because when you say like, it's a real drag. I mean, that's a clip that's been used in lots of other documentaries too.
Yeah. Right.
And I will say that we talked at the beginning about the abundance of Beatles-related films and documentaries out there. The stuff that I appreciated most in Man on the Run, along with the stuff about Linda, and they show some of her photography, which is stunning.
Right,
yeah.
I mean, she was a talent.
Yeah. I really liked the piece that was about the early years of Wings, where they were mostly playing universities and mid-sized venues, and they were just like in a hippie van together driving around the country. They got one, and the lineup was revolving so much that one of them says, you know, we basically invented Spinal Tap when we invented
Wings. I thought
Wings.
That was really funny too.
And obviously they were not in the same league as the Beatles, but I do think there are, like I said, there are some Wings albums, especially Band on the Run, which I think is a masterpiece.
Thank you
from
for
front
pointing
to back.
That out. Man on the Run, Band on the Run. We had to point that out.
Absolutely love. I also think it's a masterpiece. 1971's Ram, which is credited to both Paul and Linda. I mean, that's one of the greatest singer-songwriter albums of all time. So it's not like he was just cranking out disposable music at this time, even though a lot of those early albums were called that at the time. Ram was like pilloried in the musical press, and now it's considered a landmark of 70s music. Yeah,
they used a lot of quotes in the movie that talk about exactly that, saying, what is this? We don't, you know, I mean.
Even the other Beatles didn't like it and said so in public.
I thought this captured how important music and artistry was to McCartney. I mean, because he could have done so many different things.
Well, let's face it. He was the engine behind the Beatles and Wings. He was the engine.
He certainly was more of, he was the most businessman-like of the Beatles.
Yeah, because John seemed clueless about what was going on. John was always my guy. But when he didn't know that they were being ripped off
by
to the
Alan
extent
Klein.
That, right, I was like,
Well, and especially looking at the Peter Jackson behemoth of Get Back, you definitely see that Paul is the one that is keeping the band together, despite the fact that the rest of them all left the band at one point or another. Like, there are stories about Ringo storming out. You see George storm out in Get Back. John would go missing for long periods of time. It was Paul who was always there. And I think that kind of dogged determination is also kind of what bruised his reputation. And I'm not saying that, you know, his career is perfect, but I don't think he needs reputational rehabilitation anymore. No. I think he's arguably more beloved today than he ever was.
We saw that concert here in Spokane. He kicked off his most recent tour here in Spokane. And I thought it was a great show.
Me too.
I mean, I thought
I was totally won over, but it was a great show.
Because I had to drag Dan there. He was skeptical because we have seen some aging performers that didn't necessarily age well.
Including Moody Blues.
Yeah, that was not.
But yeah, I think that this probably isn't going to teach you too much you don't already know, but you're right about the archival footage. It's worth watching this for just that, if nothing else.
And that was our discussion of Paul McCartney, Man on the Run. Morgan Neville's documentary about Paul McCartney's post-Beatles career. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I shared our reactions to Sunday's 2026 Oscars broadcast. Let's take this moment to thank Aaron Bratt for directing the show, and we thank you, too, our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the Oscar-winning documentary filmmaker Alex Gibney. Oscar always opens up doors, especially the night of the Oscars. On that night, you hold that gold, man, and it's like having Gandalf's staff.
And once again, don't forget to support this station during our spring pledge drive, which runs until Wednesday the 25th. Every gift counts.
You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.